Welcome to a special feature here at Misanthropy Movie Blog. Recently, I had a chat with one of the best-known cult movie writer-directors, Larry Cohen. Cohen has had a career that has included hit television shows, blaxploitation classics, and blockbuster screenplays, but he carved his unique place in film history by writing and directing memorable B-movies like The Stuff, It's Alive, and Q, The Winged Serpent. For more on his career, check out the Larry Cohen Collection here at Misanthropy, where I have been working through his entire filmography. For now, enjoy this interview with the one and only Larry Cohen.
Hey, man, like, you know.
So, James Dixon pops up in a bunch of your movies. Where did he originally come from?
Came from Mr. and Mrs. Dixon, I think.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. I met Jim Dixon when we were both at Fort Dix, New Jersey in the Army. And we were in the same training unit. So we became friends back then.
Oh, that's awesome. So he's just sort of a through line through a lot of your career. That's fantastic.
Yeah, he was always a good friend and good actor, and he also wrote some screenplays that were quite good, and still is to this day a good friend.
That's good to hear.
His son is a famous basketball coach. His son Jamie is the coach with the coach of the Pittsburgh Panthers, and he was there for years, and now he's just gone over to Texas Christian as coach of the basketball team. He's making a fortune.
Yeah, I bet.
About $5 million a year.
Woo.
So, better off than being in show business.
Yeah, amazingly.
Jim is a wonderful guy.
So, I'm sure you get this question a lot, but your screenplays tend to tap to really interesting and relatable fears, particularly your horror stuff, like being prone in an ambulance, or the power of monolithic industries, or the anxieties of being a parent. Like, where do you get your ideas from? Is it a thing where you pull them from the headlines, or are you finding them somewhere else?
Sorry, guys just come to me, usually. But the thing that most of them have in common is taking something which is generally thought of as a benevolent image, like a baby or ice cream or an ambulance, or something like that, and turning it into an object of terror. So that's the thing that runs the common line from most of my movies.
I think that's pretty fascinating. I think a lot of people go for the easy scares, things like demons or what have you, but the idea of turning something so innocuous into something terrifying, that takes some talent there.
We even did God, and God told me to. God, who is certainly a benevolent figure, becomes a villainous creature, and God told me to. So, I like some painters have various subjects that they continually return to, and I have certain subjects that I continually return to, so that there's a unity to work.
So, about God told me to, that's got to be, I would say, probably it's your strangest and most surreal work, but maybe your most controversial. That's certainly up for debate. But do you feel like that's a movie that has, like, gained its reputation over time? And do you think it could even get made today with those themes?
Well, all my movies have gained over time. Most of my pictures have grown in terms of interest as the years go by. I mean, some of these movies, like Bone and Black Caesar and God's Only Two, are 40 years old, and maybe more. First picture I made was 1970. So all of a sudden, these pictures keep resurfacing on DVD, the Blu-ray, then they come up on cable, pay-per-view. I mean, most pictures made that far in the past are long forgotten. Mainly A-movies, you know, some of them with Jelly Good David Starr, they're forgotten. And this little stream of movies that I've made seem to be picking up audiences over the years. And as to whether we could make them again, I would see why not. I mean, films are a little more controversial today than they were then. So, you know, I don't see why it couldn't be made. And I was just looking at some documentaries about racism in Los Angeles, and I thought, my God, you know, we made Bones, which was a film of comedy about racism. This was made in 1970, and the Watts riots became around that time, or a little bit later, the Rodney King riots came after we'd already made the picture. So there was a tremendous amount of racial tension, and it was amazing to me that we could have made a picture that was inflammatory racially back in 1970, as we did, and that the picture still holds up today, and just as fresh and as fascinating today as it was when we made it. But, controversial humor of the piece. I've never seen the picture.
I just saw it actually this week for the first time, and you're right, it definitely holds up. It is almost a time capsule now, too, to that time.
Yeah, and the acting was wonderful. Yeah, Koto, absolutely fabulous.
Oh, he was great in it, no doubt.
Yeah, he says it's the best performance he ever gave. Michael Moriarty says the best performance he ever gave was you. I mean, I have one actor after another who says they did their best work with me. That makes me very pleased.
Oh, that's got to be a great thing to hear.
It sure is, after all this time, you know, and that these pictures are still surfacing, and the stuff just came out on Blu-ray, and everybody's calling me up, telling me how great the Blu-ray looks and how much they enjoyed the narration I did.
Oh, that's definitely one of my favorites, just cult movies in general. Let alone of your filmography. But so as far as like the influence of these movies over the years, I think you're right. Like, a lot of these have built up. Like, did you see the film Black Dynamite from a few years ago?
No, I've never seen it.
It really has a lot of affection and homage to, like, Black Caesar and Hell Up in Harlem. And it really, it gets that time and place and aesthetic, like, perfect. I'd recommend checking it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that Denzel Washington did a movie, American Gangster, I think it was called, and that was very much like Black Caesar.
Oh, definitely.
He was even dressed like Black Caesar, with the same kind of hat, same kind of clothing. And, of course, that was a great big budget movie, probably budgeted 25 times what Black Caesar was. And, but Black Caesar's a better picture, actually, because, you know, the Denzel picture just doesn't have that kind of visceral attack that Black Caesar has. That great scene at the end where Black Caesar beats the protagonist to death with a two-shot box.
Yeah, that climax of that movie is about as tense and emotionally charged as anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think so, too. Anyway, what else would you like?
So, you've done a couple times in your career with multiple movies at once, like with It's Alive and Hell Up in Harlem, and I think Return to the Salem's Lot and It's Alive 3. Mm-hmm. Did you find that to be more of a, like, a challenge or a convenience?
Well, the It's Alive 3 and the Island Alive were, and the Return to Salem's Lot were both made consecutively, not simultaneously. We went from one picture to the next immediately, and with a lot of the same cast members and the same crew, but they weren't being shot at the same time. But the you're right about the Elephant Harlem and It's Alive being made at the same time. We shot It's Alive 5 days a week, and we shot Elephant Harlem on Saturdays. But got the poor editor crazy. He didn't know what he was editing half the time.
Do you have the same editor for both movies?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I'd say, today we'll edit Hell Up in Harlem. Another day I'd say, okay, let's edit this a lot. Peter Honess, who was the editor, he was a young editor at the time. He went on to do many, many big budget films, like some of the Harry Potter films. So, but we got to start with me, and I guess I was getting crazy. The alternate editing of one picture and another.
You know, on that topic, it seems like you have attracted a lot of people that have started their careers under you and have gone on to, like, do big things. Like, I think the biggest of them maybe might be Rick Baker.
Well, that's right. Yeah, Rick Baker started with me more or less with It's Alive and went on to do some of the biggest movies of all time.
How did you happen across him? How did that connection get made?
Well, I knew Rick Baker through John Landis. He did a picture for John Landis. Well, Schlock, which he designed the gorilla that John Landis played in the picture. And I was friends with John, and so I became acquainted with Rick. And Rick started doing stuff on it. The first picture he did for me was Bones. He did burns on the bodies that were in the car cemetery. And then he did bullet holes and bullet stuff on Black Sea. And then when it came time to do a monster in that story, I got a shot at that, and we designed it together, and he did a wonderful job. So, yeah. I think he still has one of those live monsters. And I was interested to see in a documentary, J.J. Abrams just directed the recent Star Wars, a picture of his office, and behind his desk on the shelf is the It's Alive baby. So he must be a fan of that particular picture.
How about that? That's something.
Yeah, it's surprising to me. I've never met the guy, but obviously someday I'll run into him and mention it.
So I think a while back, you've done a few things with Trailers from Hell, doing commentaries both on your movies and some other movies. And I think you mentioned at one point that there was a outside possibility of both Bruce Willis and Eddie Murphy potentially winding up in Q.
Yes, actually. I interviewed Bruce Willis for a role in a movie, The Jury, that I'd written. Fortunately, by the time I met him and read him, the part had been filled already. I said, oh, I'm going to use you again as something else. But when the time came, we needed to get a name actor for the part in sales. And David Carradine was an old friend of mine, too, so we didn't use Bruce Willis, who'd never done anything besides the bartender. So, and then I saw Eddie Murphy at the improv, and I thought, hey, this guy's great, but I already decided on Michael Moriarty, so I just couldn't judge Michael Moriarty. But through other circumstances, we might have been with those two actors in the same picture. A bit of a classic, I think. But as it was, nobody could have been better than Michael Moriarty, too, and I don't think could have done better. We did with Carradine, one of his best performances.
I can agree with that. Michael Moriarty is fantastic in Q. Another one of the movies, Michael Moriarty popped up quite a bit throughout your career.
We did five movies together.
Does that include a Pick Me Up? I know he did that, too.
Yeah, that was the fifth one.
That's pretty fantastic to just, you know, have, like, people that you can rely on to come back.
Well, you know, a lot of directors have the same actor that appears in their films all the time. I mean, John Ford directed John Wayne, countless times. Federico Fellini directed Mortigiani many, many times. You know, yet so that actors and directors have kind of denied it in the work that they do.
Did you ever consider doing another comedy in the vein of Full Moon High?
Well, we did Wicked Stepmother some years later.
Oh, I totally missed that one.
We had a very good cast in that one. A lot of good comedians. Miles Standard, Colin Camp, and Betty Davis had a small part. And it was fun. I think it worked well too. But at MGM, you can get her on demand, I believe. So I think a lot of people catch on to seeing it eventually.
Oh, excellent. I'll have to dig that one up. That's one that has eluded me up to this point.
Well, it's there. It's like everything else. Time will come.
I'm sure if anything, the rest of your filmography has proven, it's that people will find it again.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, I'm very pleased with that cycle that pictures keep coming back to life again. And usually you get better reviews now than it did before.
Yeah, I honestly, another one of my favorite performances that I think you ever directed is Eric Bogosian in Special Effects, which is another one of those movies.
That was his first picture, yeah. That's, he did a wonderful job. He was starring in off-Broadway shows, and he was kind of a performance artist. And Zoe Kravitz is the leading lady in it. She starred in a movie called MS-45, for Ferrar. I liked her, and I wanted to do it again. Yes. Fortunately, she passed away some years later. She's wonderful in the picture, and so is Eric.
Yeah, I thought that was a lost gem of a movie that I hope is dug back up again.
Yeah, that's another one that needs to be resurfaced, but it will be.
It'll have its day for sure.
Yeah.
So, I read a little bit about a screenplay of yours that never got produced called Cast of Characters. Are there any other screenplays like that that didn't get made? That you wanted to make?
If you go on my website, Larry Cohn Filmmaker at AOL.com, there's 10 screenplays on there that you could read for free, and they're all 10 scripts that I wrote that have never been produced. And I thought, well, instead of letting them sit there in the filing cabinet, I'll put them out on the internet and so people can read them. And just like an artist exhibiting his painting. You know, you're so good keeping the paintings locked up in the attic. Instead of just find a gallery and then exhibit your paintings to people to see and like them. So there's 10 movies I wrote, and some of the best ones I've ever written. They're on for free on Larry Cohn Filmmaker. They're welcome. I urge everybody to have time, read a screenplay.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. I'll have to check those out.
Yeah, me too.
So, are there any current horror films that you're particularly fond of, or are you optimistic about the direction of the genre now?
I hate to tell you, but I don't usually go to see them. And, no, I don't usually go to horror films.
What is your preferred flavor, preferred genre there?
Preferred genre of movies?
Yeah.
Well, I don't particularly care for the big special effects movie. I don't particularly care for the horror films. I did like a picture called Room very much. And I thought the Room was a little bit like a phone booth that I wrote. It all took place in a phone booth, and Room, most of it took place in a sealed room. And I think the lead actress got an Oscar for the best performance.
Yeah, those movies both definitely, there's a claustrophobic aspect to them.
Exactly.
So, I know you've spoken a bit before about the remake of It's Alive. I'm curious, are you at all concerned about the upcoming Maniac Cop remake because of that experience?
Well, yes, sure I am, because the It's Alive remake is so terrible. It's so absolutely dreadful. And I really have nothing to do with the new Maniac Cop, except that they have to pay me a great deal of money. But aside from that, I have no input into the picture. And the third Maniac Cop, which was made, I really didn't have much to do with. They took the script and butchered it, and I didn't have anything really to do with the third one, just the first two.
I heard that third movie was just plagued with all kinds of production issues.
Well, the director, Wiggum Lustig, was fired off the picture, and they did make a lot of changes to the script. So, something you can't do anything about. Once you sell something, you know, they can do what they want with it.
That's got to be really hard as a writer to see that happen, though.
Well, you don't think about it once you go on to write something else. Just get made. I've already written two or three more scripts or more, and I'm more involved in those than I am in the past. So you can't do anything about it. Just let it go.
That's probably the healthy way to go about it.
What else is there?
Yeah, you have a point there.
No use getting angry because it doesn't have any positive effect.
That is a very good perspective on it.
Yeah.
So I guess...
Anything else before we...
I just have one last question. Do you have any movie recommendations for people that are big fans of your work?
Well, I would suggest that they do see the more obscure ones, like Special Effects of Perfect Strangers. And they'll discover a couple of really good movies.
I just was able to track down a copy of Deadly Illusion, and I haven't watched it yet, but that took some effort to find.
Well, I didn't have much to do with that either. I didn't direct that picture, really. I direct some of it, but I didn't direct all of it. I didn't get along with the producers, so I had a parting of the ways, and I wouldn't say that's what I can sample of one of my best works.
All right, well, thank you very much for your time.
Listen, thank you very much, and I hope people enjoyed the little interview.
I hope so, too. It was good talking to you.